On this episode of the podcast, I chat with Ryan McPherson, CEO of eCoach. We talk about his transition from teaching into technology, the growth of the eCoach team in Newcastle, and eCoach's international expansion. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to You and Tech People with Brian from eCoach. Mate, thanks for taking the time today.
No worries. Thank you for taking me and having a chat.
Cheers, man. Cheers. Mate, for people who don't know who you are or what eCoach is all about, mate, give us a quick overview of first your journey.
Yep.
And then we'll go into eCoach. What's your journey today?
Yeah, look, I think it's a bit of an interesting journey. So myself, grew up in Newcastle, went to Newcastle University, did a Bachelor of Physical Education and Biomedical Science. So certainly not where I am today based off the degree that I did, but spent 6 years following that teaching out at Mount Druitt. So some interesting times down in Sydney West. Absolutely loved the area and spent quality 6 years building relationships with some kids out there, tough times. But I think probably learned a lot during that 6 year kind of testing phase, if that makes sense, of my life. So it was just about 3 or 4 years in that Kevin Rudd brought out laptops for every kid in New South Wales and across Australia. So that was kind of, I guess, a bit of a pivot point for me in my career. So I've always been hugely into sport and I'm probably a little bit fatter than I used to be, but always been into sport, into physical activity, and at this point Kevin Rudd kind of decided that every kid in New South Wales and Australia was going to have a laptop. And it was an exciting time. You're a teacher in a school that used to have blackboards.
Yeah.
And kind of whiteboards weren't even a thing at that point in time, showing my age. But we were talking about this technology boom and what was that going to mean. And I guess I had an opportunity to kind of follow every other teacher that was going to revolt against it and kind of say, no, we're doing things the traditional way, or jump on board, see what it looked like. So I guess I can blame or thank Kevin for where I am today. So that kind of is a bit of a pivot point, I guess, for me. And so I jumped into technology at that point in time, and I always reflect on this funny story because it, 4 years into my teaching degree, I still didn't know where the reply all button was on email. Tech teaching at that point in time was not really entangled. I think I jumped in deep at that point in time, spent a couple of years developing resources for my own classes. I guess that kind of got noticed a little bit at the department level and ended up being kind of seconded into the Department of Education to work in a special team around developing online resources for students. Kind of took that plunge, and at that point in time, I was making websites, using the WordPresses of the world, and kind of starting to get into, I guess, tech, do-it-yourself tech, where you're testing platforms and signing up to Prezi. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
Yeah.
Some of these tools that were emerging at that point in time in ed tech, and kind of trying to see, what does that mean for a kid? What's that going to mean for my class? And just testing and staying up late designing, brochures and stuff using all this sort of fun stuff. So at the end of the day, kind of evolved into starting to plan that at a higher level for other teachers and obviously other programs at the Department of Education. Kind of got a little bit lagged in the bureaucracy after a couple of years at head office and, no negatives. There's some really talented people that work at in that space and very devoted people, but there was a bit of a lag in the time to get something to market, as I would say these days. So you'd work on something for too long and there was too many stumbling blocks in the way. So I looked for a commercial opportunity at that point in time, take myself out of, I guess, a home that I've been in for quite some time in the education space. And kind of, I guess, landed in a digital agency, it's still in the learning space, but making really bespoke level e-learning for corporations like Fitness First and Commonwealth Bank. So I guess what I was bringing at that point in time was a knowledge about the learning process and just bringing that to a corporate space. And I guess that was the second pivot for me. So moving out of, you know, education for kids and teaching into, I guess, corporate training, corporate learning, hence where I kind of ended up today. So I spent a couple of years there learning the ropes in, you know, designing big projects and spending 6 to 7 months on delivering a $2 million piece of e-learning for a company that would use it for, say, 6 months or something. And it was a big wow factor and a lot of fun. So, you know, you had artists and digital creators and all these sorts of things. So learn a lot around the digital process, digital agency process, but in the learning space still. And I guess... just had a moment where my wife said, you know, I've got a job in Newcastle. So we were in Sydney at that time and kind of said, you know, we're moving to Newcastle. She wears the pants in our relationship. So I kind of took that as a sign and I guess looked for an opportunity here in Newcastle to keep my passion for online education, educating as a whole, but also bring that tech side together, and found a company called Futura Group back in the day based in Lenton that had a founder of a product, Jude Novak. He's a local guy who'd been working in the tech scene for quite some time, and he developed something that was pretty unique. It was an authoring platform for making e-learning really simple, so taking away a lot of the complexities about how to build e-learning. And I found him, and the kind of story from there probably won't delve into too much, but that results in eCoach. And eCoach is now obviously a business of, I think, 21 people and kind of been growing over the last 2.5 years off the solid work of Jude's product and, you know, strategy from me and the other team members to grow the business here in Newcastle. So that's me. And there was a point in time where I also played a bit of tennis. So that's me.
Pretty handy tennis, wasn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Can swing a racket, but yeah, we won't delve into that too much. I'm a little bit too heavy now to get out on court, but
I'm sure you'd still be able to handle yourself.
But yeah, so definitely a career that had multiple pivot points, I would say. So starting off in education, but I think today, even with the company that we're now running, education has been a stream of my life, and I think tech's just kind of interwoven in that over time.
Tech's a vehicle, right?
Yeah, it just allows for the education to be either better or streamlined or more engaging.
So, yeah, right. You mentioned 20, is it 21 you've got now? You're across three countries.
Yeah, so eCoach, soon to be Co-Assemble, bit of a rebrand in place at the moment. So launching 24th of Jan, probably not allowed to say that on air, but oh well, we'll put it out there.
Now
the team have to hit a date. Yeah. We're relaunching as... So eCoach has been a great name for us over the last 2.5 years, but we've expanded in the US at such a rate that the actual eCoach trademark in the US is taken by an NFL-based app. So a little bit of a big brother to go up against in terms of competition. So we're renaming and rebranding. We've gone through, I think, the last 4 months, a great rebrand with another tech-based agency, I guess, and digital agency shorthand based in Newcastle.
Yeah,
around our brand. What does it mean to us? What does the product mean to our customers? And we've come up with Co-Assemble, collaborative, cooperative, and assembling learning, essentially. So it kind of fits really well.
Nice.
And we'll launch that in January. But I guess eCoach, grew from, I guess, three people, Jude, a developer, myself, and out of a company that was existing, and to today being a team of 21, Melbourne, Sydney, LA, and Newcastle, and someone in Colorado. So, so quite a diverse geographical space.
Yeah. It's pretty significant growth in a short time period.
Yeah, definitely a roller coaster.
Yeah, mate, going from getting that many people on, significant growth. A big challenge most startups is growing, you know, and keeping headcount along with that growth and being able to keep up with that. How have you found that as a process?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is maintaining both the culture that you wanted to start with. So, you know, we had a pretty relaxed and flexible culture, one that was rapid and agile. You know, we wanted to maintain that. And I think that's probably a big thing to really struggle with as you bring new team members on. Every new team member brings a new value. how do you make sure you get the best out of that person, but also make sure that their time at eCoach is valuable to them. So we spend a lot of time on, I guess, individual professional development, and not in a corporate way. So not with
plenty of people say they do that, right?
So yeah, not with a set plan of a document that sits somewhere and says that we're going to develop this person personally. It literally means conversations every day, and as I guess opportunities for growth where, you know, sometimes we do throw them in a bit of a deep pool, but, you know, one that's supported but is a little bit deeper than what they anticipated, and we like to see what that kind of brings out of them. So I guess at eCoach, growing 2 years, 2.5 years to 20 people, there's a lot of opportunity for growth.
Outside of people, mate, what's the biggest challenge in that time to go from? You'd be considered maybe a scale-up now. You're not really a startup, right?
So I think it goes startup to grow up to scale up. I don't know. The terminology is all different wherever you speak. But, I think at this point in time we're off and running, and I think communication is the biggest. And I think also just handing over some of those roles. When you come out of a company that's two or three people, you know, me and Jude used to have a conversation about everything. Like, yeah, let's launch the new plans and pricing and, you know, see what happens. you know, test the waters. And nowadays it's like you need to think about the marketing team and the CS team and the sales team. And I think from our perspective, it's about making sure that we've got the right channels for everyone to be on the same vision and the same pathway. And that has been difficult, especially across locations. We often talk about, you know, does the US team get all of the little small conversations that happen every day in our physical office? And how do we ensure that is still being transferred? So that means that I'm often flying over, and that's part of, if you're going to expand in another country, you've got to commit. So I've been living in LA for the last kind of, I guess, two months or so, and I'll be heading back for 6 months in 2019. So there's a level of commitment there to your team that if, you know, if you're going to stick them in a location where there might be barriers to communication and barriers to the vision, then you need to spend some time there and make sure that that's cultivated, I guess. So yeah, we dig deep on that and make sure that we also not just take myself, but we'll take some of our other team members across to allow them to have that time there, communicate some of their ideas, and then bring them back and bring that learning back, I guess. So, and it goes both ways. So travel budget increases. And I think that's important because there's a million online tools, and we're big fans of Slack. We probably have around 4,000 messages a day going through Slack. And it's a crazy stat that we all kind of laugh at from time to time.
Yeah.
And it is an amazing tool. It does allow for communication. You've got project tools like Jira and all these other software pieces. But at the end of the day, having a real conversation with someone and making sure that there is that understanding, I think from our side, has meant we've seen growth that's consistent, whereas, you know, just relying on and hoping that it was going to happen, I think, is probably something we've had to invest in.
Yeah, that old hope strategy doesn't work so well.
We'll just put you in the US and just hope that it all kind of works itself out.
Yeah, good luck. We'll chat you over the phone.
Yeah, correct. And I think that it's not fair on the team over there, and it's not fair on our team back here. So I think drawing that bridge and allowing different team members at different times to experience, I guess, both teams. And as I said, we, you know, recently just had a couple of team members go over there and live there for a month, and that learning goes both ways then. So you know, it's an investment, I think, is important, one that doesn't always come cheaply, but I think you have to kind of make that commitment. So
it's an investment, right?
In growth. As
yeah. So. Mate, continuing that growth curve, obviously, mate, you've grown and grown pretty significantly, and there's a new co-brand, which is obviously driven from the US.
Correct.
Growing team in the US. Mm-hmm. Now, what's eCoach look like over the next couple of years? What's the growth look like?
Yeah, so I think, you know, you can get into the numbers, which the investors and board always like to do, but what I like to focus on is, you know, what does our product look like? What does our people look like? And I guess, what does our customer look like? So we kind of look at everything from those three angles and kind of look at it as in, you know, what is our customer going to look like? Well, what does it look like now compared to what does that customer look like in, say, 3 years' time? And I think that customer at the moment for us, we're breaking into a bit of a new ground where there's been a lot of big and bulky platforms in the LMS. And if you haven't heard of LMS before, it's learning management system space. So anyone that wants to train their staff online is going to need a software to be able to do that. There's some big players out there, and we kind of come in at a $99 entry point, right? And we're opening up that market to any business owner who doesn't have the skills to be able to necessarily, or resources in their business to get started. And what that means is we're kind of in a traditional business market, but we're breaking new ground. So the type of people that buy our product have never used e-learning software before or online training software before, and often have never trained their staff internally. So they've literally never thought about it. So I think what we talk about is our customer at the moment is someone that needs a little bit of support and education around the concept and a great tech piece that fits with that. So we work hard at the moment on kind of trying to identify that. But I think our customer in the future in 3 years' time is going to be someone that really identifies with other platforms out there that are simple to use, because they're looking for something quick, agile, beautiful. It's important, but adds super value to their business. So, you know, recently met with a small restaurateur in Boulder, Colorado, and they had 7 employees. And he's looking at an LMS. And, you know, traditionally that's quite unique. You know, you've got 7 team members. A lot of people would just go, it's all right, we'll just do it face-to-face. But he'd identified that the value to him was going to be that he was going to grow to 20 or 30. So I think for our customer, it's going to be that they have a really unique access point to a tool that is easy to use. And so our customer, I think, will change in time to be, you know, more accessible. So they've got an accessible tool. From the product side, I think our product at the moment, we're trying to reduce complexity. So trying to break down a traditional platform that was very much a systems-based platform into something that's very user-focused. So a recent hire in the user experience space, Maddie Spear, brings a lot of experience to the team and is just, you know, kind of looking at not just beautifying the platform, but really looking at how someone actually uses the platform efficiently within a business, which will have a huge impact. So we want to be that platform that essentially is in the background, but delivers a big punch in terms of ROI, in terms of staff are well-trained. They have a great experience in their training, but that doesn't take you 6 months to achieve. And it doesn't cost $100,000. So the whole idea there from the product side is reducing complexity, still making it a very scalable product. So if you start at 7 employees, like the restaurant owner in Colorado, he could be 100 employees within 2 years' time, still be with eCoach and still see a great benefit from it. So I think, you know, there's the two sides there. And then from the people side, I think eCoach probably will double in size in the next 12 months. Our growth kind of just relies on people growth. Mostly the focus will be in customer success. We pride ourselves on ensuring that we have a great onboarding experience and support level. We don't want to outsource that. So we definitely, I think, will be growing in that space to provide a better service for those people when they do buy our tech platform, that there's a people side to the tech. And I think that's kind of becoming more and more important out there. You've got great tech. You need kind of the great support and understanding the business concept before you can go too much further. So they're the 3 pivots for us.
I completely agree. I think especially on that support side, right, if that's a key differentiator for you and onboarding them, once you've got them onboarded, and I'm sure, you know, they're going to stay with you a while because it's a relatively steep up, you know, get everything on there, customize it all, making sure that's a good experience would be important.
We look at churn rates, and churn being loss of a customer in a month. And obviously, as a subscription business, it's a recurring revenue base. So if we acquire 20 customers in a month, we look at a 1.5% churn rate. So, you know, we potentially don't want to lose any more than one in that month. And as you scale that to 80 customers, you know, trying to maintain that 1.5% churn rate relies heavily on the product design. So making sure that there's a lot of value for that customer long term. So it's not just in the first 30 days, but I also think the people in the business are adding a value of conceptual level to that organization that they can get a lot of value out of as well. So churn for us is our enemy. We fight it. So, you know, we like, and you can flip that to retention. So looking at retention, but, for us, being a growth company that needs to grow very, very quickly in customer acquisition, we focus heavily on retention. So that customer success side, I think our team will grow very much in that space. And obviously then just comes marketing and everything else that pushes more people to our product.
Well, if you're now on the retention side, right, then you just pour some more money in the top of the funnel.
That's the idea.
Business is easy, right?
It is as simple as that.
Business is easy. Yeah, nice. Oh, I guess as an industry, right, like learning and training and staff investment, it can be such a good experience or such a, for lack of a better word, shit experience. Like
100%.
It can be terrible, right? Like you can either disengage your employees or you can engage them through either a good or a bad learning process.
Businesses don't, and I'm not quite there yet on assessing the ROI of training. So, you know, you often ask, and businesses will come to us and you'll say, do you have a training budget? And they'll go, yeah, it's a massive training budget. Do you have a software budget for that? Oh, no, we don't have a budget for that. So a lot of training is still seen as face-to-face, and I think there'll always be an important part of that. I think what we're seeing, though, is that businesses need to move it online for reasons of business now is very much spread out. And if you look at our business, for example, Melbourne, Sydney, LA, Newcastle, you can no longer just physically train everyone in the space. So I think businesses are growing and their team are in more diverse places. So that need to be able to scale their training quickly is something that we really look at and make sure that we can kind of do that simply. So I think that need is there. And when you look at the budget, for example, flying three people in to do a face-to-face compared to sending out a really engaging 5-minute, 6-minute kind of course with maybe an assessment to back it up, then you can quickly see the ROI.
Yeah, for sure. Is there a big part of your organisation that's around education? So educating companies around the importance of the benefits?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's something that comes through content marketing and vice versa. But we actually just recently, in the last 2 months, run what we call a boot camp.
Yeah.
And we opened this opportunity up for that exact reason. We saw a lot of companies coming to us knowing that they needed to do it. So it was a need in their business and they knew that they needed a software, but they had no idea what it actually looked like. So this boot camp was essentially 4 sessions run over a month, which analyzed where they were currently training in their business. What was the needs analysis? You know, what was it going to take to resource it? What platform, e.g. ours, might fit into the spot? and then essentially post that, how do we get the first course up and running at the end of that 30 days? So that boot camp was intensive and probably not something you can necessarily scale. But what it did teach us was we got a whole bunch of data from companies saying, you know, look, we're here, we're at point A, we want to be at point C. We don't know the steps from point A to C. Your tech seems like it will enable that, but I don't know exactly what to do offline, if that makes sense. So I think that educating the company owner or the business decision maker is a part of what we do. We're not a simple tool that just sells itself instantaneously. Yeah. There's a bit of a concept sell there.
Yeah, so your sales pages and your conversations go from how do I take you from A to C, right?
Correct, yeah. And then also, like, how do you get from, C to F, right? Yeah. So, for example, training isn't a one-off thing. So we do a lot of work at the moment around rapid development and just-in-time training. So, you know, working with companies to say, look, you've got a problem on Monday. You can identify it on Tuesday, build a course on Wednesday and see data flowing by Friday, rather than the traditional model is, well, build a course for 3 months, roll it out for 30 minutes, look at the data and then put it away for the rest of the year.
And then rebuild it when you got to do it next time.
Yeah. So I think, and that's probably something I think even in our own business we notice from a tech point of view, our team don't necessarily schedule perfect learning opportunities throughout the year. Tools, new technologies, new ways of things are happening almost every week. They're reading about them on social media. They might be reading it on GitHub or whatever. And they're kind of taking that knowledge right there and then and using it. So I think every company is the same. Learning's kind of on the spot. So we kind of look at how do we provide a tool that's technologically accessible to be able to do that Monday to Friday, because that's been very hard in the past. So
that's sweet. That's pretty exciting and quick journey.
Yeah.
Mate, you as a person, right, behind that, obviously the company doesn't grow to the size it has, but that's some pretty strong leaders. From an education perspective, you did a bachelor's degree.
Yep.
Something completely unrelated, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But you've moved into this. You're now in the learning space.
Yep.
Mate, what's your thoughts around, well, let's start with formal education.
Yep. So I think if I look at most of our team, formal education is a part of their life and has been. And it's not always, it's like me, it's not always in the right angle to where they are now. But I think, formal education to me does present an opportunity in tech to lay a foundation. So, for example, you know, I'm the CEO of this company now looking at learning in corporations with a degree in how learning takes place in a 13-year-old. Now, the concept is slightly different, but there are layers of foundational elements that certainly I picked up at University of Newcastle that allowed me to progress that to that career. So yes, I'm not kicking a soccer ball around, you know, with corporates, but you know, I'm teaching AFL and teaching sex ed, if you can imagine. But the concepts around how does someone learn, you know, aesthetically, physically, auditory, you know, all these things are very similar. How to piece together a learning pathway, for example, for a kid to an adult sitting in the Commonwealth Bank, for example, is no different. It's just about the foundations that you do learn. So I think a lot of our team members coming on board, we have a head of growth, for example, who's done marketing and communications. And now in his job is firmly focused on sales acquisition. And even though he's got that marketing and growth, he understands where the leads are coming from. He knows the top of the funnel. And he's now looking at the kind of mid funnel, if that makes sense. So what actually happens as someone becomes a customer. So not how to get them, but to how to actually get them to pay, if that makes sense, and then retain them. So I think foundations are important. We also have team members, and I want to make this clear that we have team members that don't have it, and you know, their growth is just as strong. So I think you know, as I said with Dan, for example, young guy, you know, comes with a wealth of experience just in workplace. So, you know, comes from working in IT, and his customer success is second to none because he's understanding, he's been through the process of helping people out for a long time, either face-to-face or online. So very important to us to see that someone's got that drive, I think, to obtain the knowledge. Learning's pretty important in our business, especially coming from our space. If you're not willing to say that you're able to learn and move on, it's pretty hard to sell a learning product. So we do look for that in our staff. We look for someone that does want to, I guess, reach out and get that next piece of knowledge. And, you know, sometimes a formal education definitely shows that that willingness is there. But I also think there's an opportunity for those who haven't to enter the tech scene with really no technology. So for example, you know, that customer success role is very much a customer facing role, you know, but didn't necessarily have any software skill or, you know, any understanding of learning. So I think you can definitely progress and come in with not necessarily the perfect degree, but pivot that. In the tech industry, I think there's huge opportunities because we always talk about titles in our business, you know, the head of customer success. Well, he gave it to himself, you know. So in a business that goes from 3 to 21, you know.
He's now in a nice position.
The first person that gets hired is the head of, you know. The second person that comes in kind of fits underneath. But no, it's a bit more structured than that. But we always do laugh about that, you know. What does the head of growth mean? What is it? and I think there are opportunities for someone to pivot, to do different things. And I think if you look at the CEO, myself, a classic example, you know, probably shouldn't be running a tech company, but off a bachelor's degree in phys ed, but I'm here, so.
Yeah, mate, you wouldn't be the only one. So, mate, outside of that formal education, man, there's obviously more and more opportunities these days for people to learn outside formal education, whether it be short courses, whether it be some platform like yourself. And where do you see that growth going forward? Obviously, within your niche, but wider than that as well.
Yeah, I think we kind of chose the B2B space specifically because our product fitted a nice niche there. The B2C market is huge, and it's so massive. You've got things like you know, Coursera and you know, really big communities where knowledge is just so easy to share now, that you know, you are having more and more people who have knowledge or skill sets or vision, and they're able to share that online. You know, recently we visited Masterclass. It's a new startup over in the US who works with, you know, famous people to provide a one-off masterclass. You know, Steven Spielberg's online course of, you know, directing. It's very, very highly, you know, expensive, but it's a cool concept.
So it should be, right?
Yeah, it's a cool concept. So they're taking, I guess, the best minds and being able to relay that at a scalable level, whereas, you know, you can't get Steven Spielberg to fly around to Nui. You could be in your house in Newcastle and kind of log on if you've got the coin to be able to learn off Steven. So, I mean, that kind of concept, that B2C, I think is huge. We aren't stepping into it. We've found our kind of little target. Who knows what it looks like in the future, but it's definitely something that our team uses. So, you know, our coders or our developers, our full stack developers and front end are a part of Cloud Guru, I think it is, which is an online community for AWS and vice versa. So they're kind of learning off a software like ours,
yeah,
but dedicated to developers. And, you know, I think there's lots of opportunity for our teams to get involved. So I know our growth guy, he spends a lot of time on, you know, all of these different sites in the startup community and kind of, you know, looking at all these growth metrics and really getting his head around that, going down to places in Sydney when someone comes out from the US to spend time, you know, on Facebook growth or whatever, he's lining up. So I think, yeah, it's interesting. It's out there. So, and it can be obtained at any time. So simple membership, $49, and you can be off and, you know, have five team members learning something online in their spare time.
Yeah. Oh, it's that, A, flexibility, like you mentioned, but also B, like that accessibility. Like
accessibility,
as you said, no one else would have access to a Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
It's just not the time and place, right?
Like, it's a cool concept.
Yeah, but to be able to learn from the best minds.
That company is actually in the same co-working space that we are in LA, so that's why we've met them.
Yeah, right.
So they're upstairs. Got a bit of a nicer office than we do, but that's all right.
Give it time, mate. Yeah. Oh, that's good. It's good to be, like, once again around other people doing a similar path. Especially if, you know, they're in the US. It's obviously a big market for you guys and a big opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. Any other education things outside of that that you personally you use?
Yeah, I think, you know, myself, from my education, it's as a CEO, you can kind of get wrapped up into the daily business kind of admin, I guess, and the strategy and the running and putting fires out, kind of what you do. So I think, you know, staying ahead of the market is always important, or at least trying to. So, you know, look, I'm on LinkedIn a lot, and not from just shouting about myself or the company, but just trying to see if there's some good articles out there, some good learning. I think that what I call snippet learning, you know, that quick 5 minute, 20 minute read, so important. I have chosen around about 10 specific content blogs to follow religiously in the startup world. You know, I've got ProfitWell, who analyze pricing. They do a pricing teardown every week. And that might be, let's say, for example, you know, Slack versus HipChat, for example, and they'll do a pricing, you know, teardown and look at, you know, how it stacks up. And for me, that's a 7 minute video that can be hugely beneficial, looking at PandaDoc versus, you know, DocuSign, for example, and just looking at how they're structuring their pricing and their product. So I call that snippet learning. I take advantage of that whenever I can. So, you know, learning through essentially someone notifying you and saying, hey, here's a piece of content that's going to be really valuable.
Yeah.
It's going to take maybe 5 minutes of your time, then it's probably going to add a whole bunch of value to my strategic level.
Yeah.
So I probably pass that on to the team as well. So then we kind of share that out to our team. And I think other team members are watching design blogs and are watching marketing blogs. And kind of, I guess, there's so much content out there that just being open to spending that time every day and not just focused on the business, but actually focused on, well, how do I improve this business? I don't know everything.
Yeah.
I certainly don't. So how can I glean that information from, you know, another source that's doing this, you know, and then being able to evaluate whether it's good info or bad info.
that's a second challenge, right?
Yeah.
That's a specific blogs. Which ones would you recommend for other people?
Yeah. So look, I guess in the SaaS world where we live, you know, there's things that we look at every day. Pricing is one of them. Pricing has such a big impact on your monthly recurring revenue growth and the amount of cost of acquisition. And we just something you have to look at every day. So ProfitWell is a company that their content marketing is spot on. They are analyzing and really providing helpful information. I haven't got their service. I don't, you know, I haven't bought their service, but their content is so strong that if they write me an email, it's the one of the 400 that I open, if that makes sense. So for those guys, you know, they're making really strong content. I think that's smart from them, but it's also very helpful. I think it's Lemkin. I think he runs SASTA. It's the biggest kind of SaaS conference in the world, held in San Fran. I was able to go last year. He has text message alert blog, which is kind of interesting. I'm sure they're collecting all sorts of data off the people that they but you know, same thing, if he puts out an article about investment, you know, whether he's seeing early stage B businesses or stage A businesses getting 10 or 15 mil equity, and he kind of throws out a lot of what we call investment chat that I need to be aware of, then I'll be again reading that one. So there's certain, I guess, people influences in the business that you can identify that certainly are doing what they're saying, and then also talking about that. So we kind of leverage that. And I think, from the team perspective, I think there's just a number, like HubSpot chucks out a lot of good content. You know, we have one called E-Learning Industry in our space, which we appear on a lot, and we also get a lot of value out of. They're kind of writing a lot of articles about what's happening in the training sector. I think it's just about a matter of finding which one works for you. But I like the ones that hit me rather than necessarily kind of sessional. And it's something where we've kind of recently thought about in our platform. You know, how do we make sure that the learner doesn't have to be in the platform? You know, they can get that text message and say, hey, there's a 30-second little video that's going to make your job easier today. Here it is, delivered to your inbox in your phone or something along those lines. I think that's where learning's going.
Yeah, so. I think as long as it's valuable, right? I don't think people actually care whether it's delivered via text messages. Like, hey, if you're providing me value, hit me with it. If it's spam or if it's not correct. Valuable,
it's pretty easy to identify.
Yeah, right. And that's how inboxes just get flooded.
Yeah, 100%. So I think, you know, there's certain trusted, I guess, blogs out there that you kind of go back to and you kind of look at and, you know, FounderSource. You know, I'll check out TechCrunch a lot just to see what is happening in the space in terms of investment, whether we're comparative with our numbers. You know, from my side, it's kind of like running two businesses. You're running the investment business in a startup, and you're also in running the business. and both are very, very competing in time. So you've got to kind of keep an eye on both sides. We're an investor-led business. We have a majority shareholder and a bunch of investors that care about how we spend our money. And we also need those guys to come back and put more money in at times. So understanding if we're hitting our targets and things like that in terms of growth and customer acquisition, churn and, you know, customer value, I think that's something we keep our eye on.
Yeah, mate, it's what, you know, as I say, you've got many hats, right? And you're not the first, let's call it startup founder or startup CEO that talks about that difference between when you're fundraising, right? That's it's a job in itself, right? and to try to do that whilst running a business is extremely difficult.
Definitely, absolutely.
Awesome, man. You've obviously gone through a pretty, you know, you've gone through a diverse path. If you had to wind it back and give yourself some advice back in the days, what would you do?
Absolutely, eat better. So I think the first thing I found that, you know, I think Jude, the founder of eCoach as well, would talk about, you know, the daily stress of the job means you have to kind of find that time to exercise and eat. And that's something I think that I do very poorly. So I'd go back and give myself some advice around, you will want a PE teacher, you know this stuff, maybe take some of that advice. So I think looking after yourself, and it's something I think we do very, very, and we try and instill in our team members, but as leaders sometimes forget about. So I think I give myself that advice. The second piece of advice is just to back yourself and your ideas. So there's a couple of times in my life when obviously I pivoted pretty hard. And, you know, you walk into that first day in a digital agency when you've worked in schools for your entire career so far and in the Department of Education, a very safe place to work. And you kind of question, what the hell am I doing here? And can I do this? And is this something that, you know, I'm going to be in tears in a month's time, you know, out on the street, or is this going to work? And I think backing that foundational knowledge and skill that you've got, I think is important. So I don't think you can be an entrepreneur or get a business to this scale without kind of having a bit of a backing your concepts. And then I think you've just got to throw yourself into that. So, you know, I'll be open and frank. Doing this kind of job means you work damn hard. And the hours are not kind, and you know, it's a commitment. So owning your own business or running an investment-based business for someone else means that you are driven into that every day. You live it and breathe it. So it's a weekend thing. So I think giving myself advice that to just take those times out and enjoy the, you know, some time off, I think is important, just to keep the sanity and to keep the kilos off, as I said.
It's a big thing. It's a challenge, right?
Yeah, and probably just would have told myself to go get like the hair replacement stuff a little bit earlier, because I think I've gone grey and, you know, lost a bit of hair in the meantime. But you know, I'm not trying to make out that it's all bad, because I think the biggest thing that I've probably learned is that every day is a reward to see a staff member, you know, necessarily take on a new project or win that customer, or, you know, for us to get an award based off the fact that the team have, you know, really crunched it a month, for example, or a platform feature. So I think, you know, it's huge reward, and I think, you know, anything that gives you a huge reward obviously has a hard work component to it. So it goes hand in hand. But, yeah, I think the advice would be just be healthier. That'd be my advice. And obviously back yourself and yeah, just back yourself for your ideas.
Cool. Yeah. Hey, last thing's just around Newcastle. You obviously build the majority of your team here. Mm-hmm. And why Newcastle?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I think and I think it's changing. So you know, I think we were talking earlier before offline, but you know, Newcastle as a lifestyle is pretty unbeatable. I've lived in a lot of cities and recently obviously in LA, and you know, just got to wash yourself after you come back from LA. But you know, coming back to Newcastle, I think our team members are they're able to have a family in Newcastle very easily, and or maybe not easily, but you know, they can have that family lifestyle. I think it's got all of the elements from a lifestyle potential, the beaches, the kind of lack of traffic, and you know, so they can have a lifestyle outside of work but also be hard driven at work. So you know, being able to commute to work maybe in 3 to 4 minutes or 5 or 10, 15 minutes allows them to have that more balanced approach. So I think lifestyle for us, you know, we probably have a decision very soon. You know, what has happened with the business if it goes to the US? What do we do? Does it stay here in Newcastle? Do we shift it to the US? And I think that's something that we'll be openly chatting about. But there'll be a fair argument to keep it here, to retain the kinds of quality people that we have that are kind of coming to us because they get to have a bit of both. They get to have a great lifestyle here in Newcastle. There's a great atmosphere around Newcastle building, I think, at the moment. And I think people feed off that. And then obviously you've got companies doing well underneath that as well, bubbling to the surface. All that breeds a quality person coming to work for you, but also gets to have a quality lifestyle. I mean, and that's probably, you know, in Sydney, it's a little bit harder to do at the moment. So with prices and traffic and everything else. Yeah, so
and if they're happier, they're going to give you back more, right?
Yeah, and it was interesting, and just a really small component around this. When we went out to recruit, I think in July we've had 8 team members join us. So you can imagine onboarding at eCoach is an intense time. But we anticipated that majority of those roles would come from Sydney. We just anticipated that maybe we couldn't find that experience or that person. But what we were surprised, well, not maybe not surprised, but we were kind of a little bit surprised, but we actually we got everyone from Newcastle. And they're amazing, you know, and they're very skilled, and maybe they're a little bit hidden to us. But now that we know that, I think we definitely will be looking here first and Sydney second, if that makes sense. And and because the people that have come have had a good attitude, a quality kind of balance to that attitude, but they're also extremely successful in what they've done previously. So, you know, we've got, you know, people come from the Greater Bank. We've had people come from all sorts of places where, you know, traditional business melding with startups and all that sort of stuff. I think there's a lot of skill out there. And then obviously you've got the university right on the doorstep just breeding new talent. And that's one area we haven't been able to get into yet, but we're very keen.
There's a lot of talent around. And it's good with organisations like yourself. Provides more opportunity for talent to stay and not have to move to Sydney, right?
Yeah. Maybe in our business has to move to LA, but that's okay. You get to come back.
Yeah, that's all right. Hey, what's the greatest challenge for being in Newcastle?
Yeah, I think the perception. So when we go out for investment, people say where. And I think we haven't built yet a really... you know, we're talking to both investors in the US and also investors here. And I think, you know, I was in an investor meeting very recently in Sydney, and he said, oh, I haven't seen a tech company from Newcastle before. What, you know, where'd you guys come from? And I as you said, I think that's a myth. There's a lot of good tech companies here in the space, but we're a bit hidden at the
moment.
It's
a very real challenge, eh? You're one of multiple founders that I've spoken to who have gone through investment rounds who have face the challenge of being in Newcastle.
Had to explain, you know, why you're in Newcastle, why you're not in Sydney or Melbourne or vice versa, or Brisbane at the moment, very big. So I think until the environment starts to present itself a little bit, and we can probably help do that, you know, companies like ours that are growing so quickly, getting our story out there, things like this is a great opportunity to build that narrative. So then when you do walk into the investor, they go, oh, yeah, I've heard things about Newcastle, and that's great that you guys are coming out of that scene.
Yeah.
Look, it's not going to stop anyone investing in you, but I think that's a challenge about just, you know, why are you making that decision? You know, it's pretty quick, and you can hear I can justify it very quickly. Our rent, we have a cool space for a very affordable price. You know, as I said, flexibility, the lifestyle, there's so many pluses that's maybe not known out there. So I think that's a challenge coming from Newcastle. In the States, the challenge is there's no one knows where Newcastle is, so that's fine.
Yeah.
You basically just said, yeah, we're from Sydney.
Yeah.
we're from just up the road,
yeah.
You know, from Sydney. So.
If that gets it across the line, that's fine.
But that's okay. I don't know where Wichita is either, so it's all good.
Oh, good, man. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners?
No, I think we could just think, you know, there's a great opportunity in Newcastle to work in companies like ours. eCoach is a growing company. I know that there's plenty more out there, you know, and there's also a bit of a community growing. You know, I know that there's drinks down in Hamilton on Fridays. You know, there's new tech startup meetings. There's kind of, you know, I think there are things starting to blossom. So I think if you are looking for, you know, work in Newcastle, that balance and that opportunity is here. Might be a little bit hidden at the moment. So I think doing your research is something that is worth doing. I definitely think that there are companies like ours out there looking for quality people to come and invest in our company. And we'll probably, you know, throw that investment straight back at them in terms of time and growth opportunities. So, yeah.
Perfect, man.
Cool.
Thank you, Tom.
No worries. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. You can find the show notes on our website, newtechpeople.com.au. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter for daily updates on all the events happening in the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. Feel free to share any feedback with us on our socials. Until next time, thank you.